Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, the 27th of December, 2016. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. The incoming Speaker of the Alaska House is known as a level-headed moderate, willing to work across party lines, but he faces major tests in leading a new majority coalition and trying to secure agreement on a plan to address the state's multi-billion dollar deficit. Democratic Representative Bryce Edgman of Dillingham acknowledges some moments of trepidation about his new role, but he says he's someone who rises to that challenge. Edgman ascends to the House Speaker's job 10 years into his political career. It started with Edgman winning a primary contest with a coin toss against his former boss. Edgman is a strong advocate for rural Alaska issues. A 28-year-old Petersburg man was sentenced this month in federal court to the mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years in jail for transporting child pornography. He also waits sentencing on a state charge for heroin. Here's more in this report. Marvin Mitchell Jackson was sentenced December 20th by U.S. District Judge Timothy Burgess in Juneau after pleading guilty to one charge of transporting child porn. The federal case came about after Jackson was arrested January 18th at Petersburg's airport. He arrived on the morning flight from Seattle, and local police stopped him at the airport. Officers found 22 grams of heroin inside a shampoo bottle, along with hypodermic needles in his baggage. They also seized his cell phone and found images of child pornography. Initially, he only faced state drug charges, and he was released on $5,000 bail later in January. Federal agents and local police executed a search warrant at Jackson's Lumber Street home on May 12th. During that search, officers found hundreds of images of young children engaged in sexually explicit conduct. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Jackson had combined photos of himself with images of children. He also included text on the images stating his fantasies of sexual abuse. Jackson was indicted on the federal charges on June 21st and arrested again on June 24th. He signed a plea agreement on the federal charges and agreed to a guilty plea for transporting child porn. For that, he received a 5-year prison sentence from Judge Burgess, along with a 30-year term of supervised release. The U.S. Attorney's Office says the prosecution is part of a nationwide initiative started in May of 2006 called Project Safe Childhood. It's designed to protect children from online exploitation and abuse. Earlier in December, Jackson had pleaded guilty to second-degree misconduct involving a controlled substance in the state case. He's scheduled for sentencing in that case February 28th before Superior Court Judge William Carey. Elsewhere around Southeast, a breakdown at Sitka's Green Lake Hydroelectric Plant has forced that community to temporarily switch its fuel sources this winter. The city, which normally runs on hydropower, has been using diesel since October to meet energy demand on the coldest of days. As the electric department in Sitka waits for a new part to arrive, Emily Kwong visited the dam to see the work in progress.
Where we're going is we're going to Green Lake Dam. This is a side view of the dam right here.
Brian Bertacci is Sitka's utility director. It's 8 in the morning. The temperature is below freezing and has been for several weeks. But before throwing on our coats, we take a moment to look at a diagram of the dam's inner workings.
This is the single most important safety feature.
That being the intake gate.
If there's a leak or something goes wrong in the powerhouse, the first thing you do is you close that gate. Because you can imagine the amount of water coming down there.
The gate is opened and closed by a giant hydraulic cylinder, 11 feet long. The problem is that it's made of carbon steel, which corrodes easily in fresh water. Bertacci shows me a picture of the old part. It's rusted, red, and chewed up, like a Slim Jim.
Last time it was operated was 1989, and it's underwater when it's running, so all the fish stuff, and this was really a mess.
Now, FERC, that's the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, requires that the whole system be inspected every 5 years. But that didn't happen in Sitka. Decades went by with no inspection of Green Lake. I ask Bertacci, who started on the job last year, why that is.
I think there were a lot of other distractions. You know, they're working on overtime. Funding was kind of tight for a lot of years on the electric department. They weren't doing much. They weren't doing tree trimming. There's a lot of stuff that you just can't do. But I can't speak to why the decision was made not to do that. All I know is My job is to make sure we're in compliance with all the rules and regs.
So to get Sitka back into compliance, the electric department decided to schedule an inspection of Green Lake on October 17th.
We didn't want to do this when we've got middle of summer with our tourist season, fish processing going on, when we may need all the energy for sure. We picked this time of year to go do it. We thought it would work okay, but it didn't.
What happened is this. The gate closed, but red oil appeared in the water. That means the seal on the hydraulic cylinder had broken. Coast Guard was called in to contain the leak, about 5 gallons of oil. The dam shut down, and Bertacci, who was then acting city administrator, authorized an emergency procurement of $60,000 for a replacement cylinder to be built out of stainless steel, which should fare underwater much better. When it arrives, it will be installed inside the belly of the dam, at the bottom of a 160-foot shaft.
Be careful, obviously, but that's the shaft, you know.
Holy cow.
We're at the Green Lake Dam. Water is spewing over the top in a furious cascade, and I'm peering over the edge of this tiny cement-walled shaft, where three mechanics have been working 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, to clean out the muck and prepare the area at the bottom for the new part. Their names are Adam Charlton, Tony Bolovich, and Trevor Webb. I caught up with Bolovich and Webb before they climbed down.
When you get down there, it's just like working in a muddy ditch if you're laying a pipe in a muddy ditch. So,
with no light.
Yeah, with very little light.
They're having their lunch down there, you know? I mean, it's amazing.
Safety is Bertacci's number one priority. Going down the shaft is a ladder, and when the mechanics descend, they wear a harness that they can hook onto the side. They're also clipped to a cable that would automatically catch them if they fall. On standby is a crew of emergency and search and rescue personnel.
It's the unsung heroes in all this, too, because when the wind up or it's snowing, they've gotten out there and they're doing this job.
Temperatures plummeted in December, and the cold has forced the electric department to fire up the diesel generators during peak use. So far, they're within the city's $166,000 budget for diesel, but it's very likely that what happened at Green Lake will continue to happen, that major components of Sitka's electrical infrastructure will keep failing. Here's City Administrator Mark Gorman.
It's reaching the end of its life, and we probably have not put in the bank what we needed to put in terms of taking care of it, and we're seeing those consequences now as major pieces of our infrastructure deteriorate and fail.
Like the Marine Street substation, with transformers so old the city fast-tracked backup, or the 69 kilovolt line which faulted this month. The Sitka Assembly recently approved a 10-year plan to fix all this stuff, but that will take money, which is scarce within a city also tasked with paying off the $150 million Blue Lake Dam. For Bertacci, the key is identifying what the city is not going to fix.
The small stuff will fail that causes, you know, a street to be out or short outages, but we want to try and address the things that could cause long-term outages, because that's what we don't want for the community. You know, we hate to have a two-month outage in the middle of our summer season impacting fish processing and everything else. So that's where our focus is, and that's why we're here today.
Not here yet is the hydraulic cylinder, but it's scheduled to arrive by barge on Tuesday. The city hopes that the Green Lake Dam will be back in operation before the new year and the next cold snap. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
In 1991, the movie White Fang debuted in theaters across the country. Before it hit the big screen, crews brought sets, actors, and jobs to Haines for the filming of the production. The movie brought an estimated $2.6 million to that town. Now, 25 years after its release, a museum in Haines is reliving memories of when Hollywood came to town. Abby Collins has more on that story.
What's his name?
White Fang.
What does that mean?
White Fang.
White Fang follows Jack Conroy, a gold prospector played by a young Ethan Hawke. It tells the story of the friendship between Conroy and a half-wolf, half-dog. It's set in the Alaskan wilderness and filmed in Haines. While most people only see the finished product of the movie, many in Haines have memories from that year when actors and film crews took over town.
My name is Tom Andreessen. I worked on White Fang from late September of 89 until the end of the production 1 year later in August of 1990. The whole sled crash with the coffin sliding out on the ice mm-hmm. and the corpse sliding out. That was filmed in like four different locations, one of which was the pool where they floated.
The Sheldon Museum and Cultural Center's White Fang exhibit is filled with memories, including oral histories recorded by community coordinator Madeline Wittig.
I didn't want it to be an exhibit about the story of White Fang, the movie itself, but of the production and what its impact was in Haines.
I am Jonathan Danford Green. Probably much better known as Jono. It dropped some millions of dollars that the town desperately needed and brought some definitely needed notoriety and exposure to this town.
Photos, newspaper articles, and set pieces fill the exhibit. A script is propped open, revealing production notes. On a tour of the room, Wittig starts at a wall dedicated to location scouting.
One of the hardest places for them to find was Jack's father's claim, because he wanted a stream with a place for a cabin, and he wanted a waterfall, like with the woods, and they're like, oh God, where are we going to find that? And it was deep in the Kelsaws where they ended up filming Scotty's claim.
Photographs from the set cover a large portion of one wall, but many of the images picture unidentified people. Wittig says she wanted to give the community a chance to change that, welcoming them to come label the photos with more information. A number of pictures have already been updated, helping to piece that history back together. But Wittig says there are some things that are probably lost to history.
We have a couple of pictures of these gentlemen holding a sign that says Pinky and the Nice Guys, Reunion Tour 1990. I have no idea.
Wittig shares one important part of the production, with photos taken from a scene imitating the famous golden stairs of the Chilkoot Trail. She says the weather did not always cooperate.
You can see in the pictures the difference in the days. So, like, this is what the day looked like. It was this beautiful day, and they wanted it to be stormy. So they had to make a storm.
For Haines residents, the filming not only brought Hollywood to town, it also gave many the opportunity to be a part of Hollywood. Hundreds of people from Haines were extras in the production. So, one section of the exhibit is about just that. It includes costume pieces, photos, and a pay stub for around $44.
This is Cheryl Mullen's hat that she wore when she was dressed up as a man on the pass. This is John Carlson's coat. It's still filthy 25 years later.
When the filming was complete, the movie premiered in Alaska. But it couldn't happen in Haines because, like today, the town didn't have a movie theater. So they headed to Juneau.
A whole bunch of people piled onto the ferry so they could make it that night. And then the bridge, it was like a horrible, cold, blustery ferry ride down to Juneau. And the bridge froze. And they almost missed the start of the movie because they couldn't get off the boat in Juneau.
Aside from many memories, there's still a physical reminder of the movie in Haines. The Dalton City film set from White Fang still stands in town. It's a popular tourist attraction and part of the Southeast Alaska State Fair. Wittig says she wants community members to be a part of the exhibit, just like they were a part of the movie.
I wanted it to be casual. I didn't want it to be this very starchy, hands-off history exhibit, because history is fluid, it's living, and it's something that I want people to participate in.
The temporary exhibit is open through February 24th, reliving the year that Hollywood left its mark in Haines for years to come.
White Fang!
Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
And for KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.